Hi, I'm Simone Maben, a physician, a graduate of the Air Force Academy, a professional athlete, and a certified personal trainer. This is a podcast about living a healthy, fit, and balanced life 365 days a year.
Okay, times have officially changed in medicine, and today I am going to touch in on that. Last week, the CDC passed down an order that all patients seen in clinic will be urgent cases only, and we should limit our in-person contact. So that has forced us to start using telemedicine. And so today's episode is going to focus in on using telemedicine. The first part of the episode will focus in on how patients use it and whether or not this is going to be a good thing or bad thing. And then also whether or not this is the way of the future for the way we should do our healthcare. And then next, we'll go in and focus in on how to use it from the provider standpoint. I've seen maybe 140 to 150 patients since the CDC made this announcement. I had to shift my clinics to telemedicine only. And so by no means am I an expert, but that's just my experience level. So since that time, it's been quick, fast, and dirty in learning telemedicine. And so I want to share some tips and tricks that I've picked up, as well as some actual facts and regulations to using telemedicine, including some of the billing aspects, and then talk a little bit about, from our perspective, whether or not this would be a good transition going forward. It certainly has certainly has pushed us looking at using telemedicine a little bit more aggressively, even though it has been present, because we just weren't using that tool as much as we should. And so I think in times like this, it's only going to help us move forward in our practice to ensure that even after we're through this medical crisis, that we're actually able to deliver care in more ways than not, and then potentially even reaching those that did not have the opportunity to go to clinics in the past. So a lot of exciting things to look forward to once we're through the crisis point, of course. So if you like what you hear today, please subscribe, like, or favorite on your listening platform. Please take time to leave a review on Apple Podcast. These opinions do not represent my employer or any associated partnerships. None of my opinions should be considered medical advice. Okay, first, let's just start from the top on the initial reaction to the normal operations changing in clinic. The first reaction from patients was everyone was freaking out. We were getting so many messages and calls about their appointments that were coming up, medications, what the next step was, what are we going to do? A lot of questions. So the first reaction was just freaking out. And the job of the provider and of the staff is really trying to reassure everyone that everyone would be taken care of, but most importantly, in some type of orderly fashion. People with an appointment in April, you know, had to wait for us to manage the people that needed help today and the next day. I mean, we're a pretty high volume clinic. And so asking us what's going to happen 2 weeks from now was really very low priority to what's happening today. So as a patient, understanding that when there's a crisis like this, things need to be done in an orderly manner is number one. Of course, just asking, hey, what to expect? Should I come to clinic? Should I not? Normal questions like that were really helpful, but just realizing that clinics are very overwhelmed right now. And even though people are not being admitted to our service on the outpatient side of things with the coronavirus infections, you know, our operations have changed. And so the clinic environment is overwhelmed with a number of people that are reaching out. And so I think understanding that every physician, every operation, every clinic is having to adjust in this time would be really helpful just from the patient standpoint. I think after the initial reactions calmed down due to the helpful reach out from our staff and then just reassurance from as many messages as we could send through my chart and emails and phone calls. After all that calmed down, the next situation to manage was everyone worried about how to use the technology once we started mentioning telemedicine visits. Oh my gosh, I don't know how to use this. I don't have access to that. I don't have an account. I don't have a password. I don't have a phone that does not flip. I don't have a computer. then all the concerns became around technology, and people started thinking they weren't going to be taken care of because they didn't have the technology or didn't know how to use the technology. So then another wave of reassurance had to come through where, you know, all I would write back sometimes on my chart messages, don't worry, you will be taken care of. Me or my staff will contact you. I mean, I just had to keep moving because those are the kind of messages I was getting. And that's exactly what I meant. And that's what occurred. Not one single patient did not get forgotten or get dropped or did not get treated. It just had to be in some type of organized manner. And whether or not they had the technology or not at the time, we still took care of the patient. The technology exists for payment primarily, secondly, for documentation. And so in times like this, we still were able to take care of our patients with the second priority of being working on getting the technology up to where it could be helpful for everyone. And so after we started easing concerns about that, and I think we're still going to have to do that for the next few weeks because there's still a lot of people we haven't seen since this all occurred. But after we transitioned from calming people down about technology and that reassuring that they will be taken care of, then there just became a priority of triaging everyone. And so the reality is that some appointments really just had to get canceled or rescheduled due to our need to have to make this big jump and take care of everybody in a way that was bringing out the priority cases first. And so some people had to move their appointment back. And of course, doctors now, at least in our clinics, doctors were on the ground calling patients to try to triage, to figure out who needed to be seen, who needed to be moved back a little bit later, who needed to come in essentially urgently. And there are very few cases of people we do bring into the clinic at this moment. Very, very few. Essentially, the criteria for us is if you would otherwise go to the emergency department because something is so severe in your condition that we treat, then we would rather have you come as an individual to our clinic than obviously go to emergency department. There's an overload there. You probably are having issues getting in. It's not the appropriate place to be seen. And if it's something that we typically would manage anyway because of our field, then in those cases, you'd come to clinic. And so with those variety of circumstances, identifying people in the appropriate level to appropriate place for them to be seen and time for them to be seen, that started taking up more of our day as well in terms of the burden of what to do that day. You have to triage. You have to also treat the patients you're currently supposed to be treating in that moment. And then you also have to answer all the concerns from people worried about what the future held for them and getting their care. And so, you know, the important thing I think for patients to take away from this is that if you call the doctor office, you will get some direction on what you should do based on what your concern or question is. The number one thing, I think everybody knows this by now, but the number one thing you shouldn't do is go to the emergency department, whether it's concern about one issue or another. It's really calling to get screened and triaged and figure out where you should go when, depending on what the issue is. For my field, pain, it's a whole nother podcast to talk about whether you think it's emergent, urgent, or kind of standard condition that needs to be managed kind of routinely, if you will. But for the most part, for pain, we kind of have our threshold for what we count for all those different things. So I would say overall, now that I've done about 140 to 150 of the telemedicine visits, that the telemedicine for my patients has been sufficient for 99% of the visits that I've seen in terms of diagnosis and treatment. So the care is good. So I think sometimes people think I need to physically be in the clinic or it's just not going to be as good. Well, I understand the need to want to talk to a person face to face. I mean, everybody values that as part of a critical element to communication. It's just like being in a long distance relationship or when a loved one is deployed. There's nothing like communicating unless you're in the face of that person. But in a time of crisis and in a time of infection and in a time where other things are priority, like survival, then I'm letting you know that from my experience, we can safely take care of people without being seen face to face with people in person. And I personally just believe in a time like this, the timeliness and the accurateness of care is the number one priority, rather than this feel good stuff about physically sitting across, you know, the chair, across the desk, across the exam table from your provider. I think, you know, changing our view of what the priority is the number one thing we can do right now to all help each other. Now, from a technical aspect, when it comes to utilizing the electronic medical record or the video camera or the system in which your provider is telling you needs to be used, it's not urgent that it be figured out, but it should be part of the task you take on yourself to be treated as a patient. And I'm going to tell you why. The number one priority, like I said, is timeliness and accurateness of care, especially in these conditions. However, based on the way the compensation is working right now for telemedicine, if there is not a two-way video synchronous connection, that that visit and that care that that provider delivered for you may not be compensated at all or decreased significantly. And so by no means is that the number one thing everyone's worried about right now, which is why it's one of the last things I'm bringing up. But after that initial visit and you not being able to figure out the video or the connection, you know, making some time and some effort to figure out that connection so that you can have, number one, that face-to-face contact, number two, appropriate compensation for the whole healthcare team. I'm not talking about the provider. Let's remember in clinic situations that money is not the provider's money, but the care is not being, you know, paid for. And so we have to get to a point eventually to where efforts are being made so that everyone in the team can get paid for the care that's going out to all these patients that are being taken care of. The last thing I'd like to talk about from a patient perspective is when to reach out to a clinic when you think you need to be seen. I had a patient I was talking to about his chronic pain that mentioned something about a cardiology visit that had been delayed, and he didn't know how long it was going to take. And he had a very specific cardiac concern. And he said he was going to wait until all this, quote unquote, died down. Listen, this is not current operations forever, but this is current operations now. And we don't know when things are going to return to normal for clinic visits. Currently, you know, things are actually going to get worse for a while. So if you need care, we need to figure out how to get you care, especially if it's an important condition. I'm not talking about urgent or emergent at this point because that's irrelevant to this topic. But if it's an important condition, then you need to call the clinic to see if they're doing telemedicine and what their view is on how to deliver you the care that you need for that condition. Just like how we've transitioned in my pain clinic to a bunch of telemedicine visits. Clearly, we did it and we're taking care of people. I took care of 140 to 150 people within the last 7 days. So, and I don't consider my field to be something that has to occur for the world to function. You know, I'm not doing transplant surgery or brain surgery here. But if I'm doing it, the bottom line is surely there are other clinics that are offering you these opportunities to still have routine follow-up and continue to move forward in your treatment plan. So asking the question for very important conditions is reasonable. Now, of course, if there's things that are not important, but something you just want to follow up on, waiting a little bit is reasonable. But I think, you know, still asking could not hurt anything. You know, making the call to just say, hey, I'm just wondering when you guys are going to get back to scheduling patients for X, Y, or Z condition, and they might be able to offer you an answer. Overall, my major takeaway for this aspect of the episode is to point out that this is going to be a huge transition for everyone in healthcare, including the patients, but there has to be some quick adjustment, just like how the physicians and providers and clinics had to on the patient side of things, and to not let your care go down in priority because we're taking care of coronavirus and other aspects of healthcare. You have to continue to follow through with all your other medical needs and call your providers. Call to make your appointment, call to ask questions. There's nothing wrong with asking questions about what the next step is to do considering the current pandemic. Switching gears now to focus in on telemedicine coming from the perspective of the provider. We're going to break this down into a couple different areas, starting with the physical setup and then going into exactly what it's like to have the telemedicine phone visit, and then some information on documentation and billing, some of the technical difficulties you can run into, and then some of the tips and tricks of the trade I've fallen into, and then downfalls, and then finally what I think is going to happen with the future of telemedicine going forward, even after the pandemic is long and gone. Okay, first of all, with the setup of telemedicine, from all the training I've done, the information I received, for those that don't know, it's not just like a FaceTime conversation where you can be holding your phone, walking around the hall, or, you know, in your house. There's some strict guidelines and recommendations in terms of what the actual setup has to be for your video call. And this is primarily to set a standard of professionalism, because clearly that is not common sense for a lot of people. So the setup from the provider standpoint is that you have to be sitting first of all. You have to have either professional clothing on like you would in a clinic visit. If you're wearing scrubs, you have to have a white coat on. And then for your ID badge that you typically wear at work, wearing it up at the level of the chest so it can be visible when you're on the call. The background should be as clear as possible. Some places actually offer telemedicine rooms where there's actually a background, a backdrop that you can use so that it's as professional and as clean as possible. If you don't need that and you have a clear black background wall, that works just fine. In terms of the actual setup around you, there can't be a lot of items, like personal items. There has to be no food visible. If you're even drinking, there has to be limitations on it being just water, and has to be covered with a cover top on it. I mean, so there's a lot of things that go into setting the standard for a professional video call for the provider on the other side of things. Of course, some people may not follow this, but this is just what I've been told and what I'm practicing. So that's what I would recommend. Plus, I don't know why you wouldn't want to be as professional as possible when you're talking to your patients anyway, unless there's just some reason that you can't do those things. Now, when it goes into actually doing the visit, the first step in your interface is that the visit actually needs to be converted to a telemedicine visit. You can't just see your patients in the system as a normal in-office follow-up, technically how it's written, and then just start documenting, writing down like it's normal, because there's no way for the system to capture that visit actually is supposed to be a telemedicine visit for billing reasons, so that everyone that does the billing in the office can actually look for those parameters. So the visit needs to be changed to telemedicine. This also allows for the interface to exist for the patient because it's been changed to telemedicine. They won't actually be able to get into the visit via video if the visit is still set up as an in-clinic visit. Now, within the information I've been given, my electronic medical record system is Epic, and my app that I use is Haiku. And so I'm mostly going to be talking from perspectives relating to those systems, since that's what I'm using currently. In terms of the documentation for the visit, there are some key items that you'll need to have in the documentation. You have to have acknowledgement from the patient that they are using the telemedicine system and that they adhere to the limitations and guidelines that exist for the synchronous two-way audio-video connection. And then you also need to document that the visit was conducted by a two-way synchronous audio-video connection. this statement can be adjusted if it's actually going to turn into an audio-only visit. You just need to adjust that documentation. When it comes to the billing, you would still document that code that you would use that's appropriate for that visit, whether it be a level 4 or 5, which are typically mine, or I guess there's level 2 and 3 as well, depending on where you practice. So whatever level visit you typically are documenting for, you can document that with the modifier of a 52 if the visit is actually going to be done audio only. If the video is going to be used, no modifier is going to be needed. If the visit was set appropriately through your system as being telemedicine, it would be obvious to the billers. You just need to make sure you have all those other elements we talked about. There are a lot more details on billing, such as which visits can be done for time base and which ones have to be otherwise. For a lot of telemedicine visits, they have to be time-based. And so you have to really read about that. For my visits, luckily, can still be based on what you actually do, which is how I normally bill my visits. Now, moving along to the other facets that are important, you have to document the billing address where the patient's visit took place. And so in our system, there's a place where you normally check in the patient where that would be documented, and you would, you know, just put that in there and just make sure that's in. So as long as you follow the format, it's pretty easy because you can't miss that. I kind of just have a flow that I go through when I'm doing all my billing where I'll hit on rooming first, throw that in there, plan, boom, throw that in there. Then I'm going down into the wrap up, and then I go into my billing, which is on the bottom of the screen, and then boom, I'm going into my documentation. It's just a simple, to me, it's just a simple flow. I'm sure everybody has their own flow, but that's what I do. And so I just use that first step to do the documentation of the location of the address first. There's a lot of exceptions where patients can be seen to receive their care for telemedicine, specifically with Medicare. Right now, due to the pandemic, there's been a lot of restrictions lifted, allowing us to treat patients outside of our state where we're licensed to reach out to other states. But you have to double check on that. I think a lot of people are still just documenting and doing what they need to take care of their patients, but just in your mind, realizing the compensation might be there might not be there is kind of the secondary point to take away from that. Now, in terms of the video connection, I'm using Polycom through Johns Hopkins, and I'm also connecting through that with the Haiku app through Epic. And so it's pretty easy. At the bottom of the actual visit, you can actually see the telemed icon. You click on that, join visit. Super easy. And it goes directly through my Polycom. It's so easy. I prefer to do that than even going through my laptop. The last I've heard is, due to the coronavirus emergency, other platforms are going to be accepted for telemedicine that typically are not. So things like FaceTime and Skype. The reason that those are typically not allowed is because of the lack of security through those devices. So if you can use the secure video interface that's recommended by your clinic or by your hospital system, I recommend that first, because there's a reason that they're recommending it. But I think the point is, if there's a physical need due to the emergency right now and telemed not being rolled out as thoroughly as it should be, then rolling on to use FaceTime or Skype would be appropriate in those incidences. I have yet to have to use those because I just don't find it necessary to risk that. And I have everything I need within my laptop, in my phone. Now, let me talk a little bit about what I do in terms of the physical setup. Now, like I talked about with the Haiku app, I just click on the bottom of the app and I can see the telemed icon and I click on that. I tend to just use my phone and connect that way because Epic recognizes that you've connected to that visit using that interface if you do. And I just like that it's documented somewhere in the chart without me writing it, that there's proof that I actually connected through the device. And so that's actually monitored in Epic, and they have a way to see that you actually did use that interface, as well as the fact that the patient was able to log in as well. And so I like to use that, and I keep that up through my phone and have had no issues with connecting and no issues with quality of video or anything like that. I keep that up and propped up while I also have my laptop or my computer screen from a desktop up at work. And then it's nice because I have my separate video as well as my ability kind of to document and type and work on the screen as I'm going at the same time. Of course, you can just use the interface on your laptop or your computer at work and essentially have the same workflow. I think the real only benefit I've noticed in the differences of using the computer at work or a laptop is that you can share the screen. So for example, if I'm going through an MRI of the lumbar spine with the patient and I want to show them exactly what areas we're talking about, then I would probably want to share the screen and do it through the laptop and desktop at work. You're not going to be able to have that same capabilities doing it on the cell phone. Now, let's talk a little bit more about a few struggles and downfalls I've seen doing this system with telemedicine so far. First, I would say that I've noticed a lot of people seem to get a little too social with it. Like they're so excited, I guess, kind of like they're used to with their friends and their family. They feel like it's a time to like catch up and talk about using it and talk about Corona and like all these very non-medical things. And not that I don't have social conversations with my patients in clinic, but it seems to be the highlight of the visit. So what I've done now is set at the beginning of the call, my very first hello is the agenda for the visit, and I set the expectations of our time together, and I make it sound as professional as possible. Of course, with having a little laugh here and checking in as I normally would, but just allowing them to learn the structure. You know, in this instance, you have to remember that you're helping people get used to this new technology, and you're responsible for educating them if it seems like they're not used to it. And that will help you flow with your visits, get all the information you need from them, make sure they get what you need, make sure that they get what they're looking for from the visit in an efficient way, because nobody wants to waste time, the patient nor you. Now, the other thing I've seen has been an issue is late sign-ins or people missing calls. I think, you know, the best way to manage that, especially if you're in a very high volume clinic like I am, and, you know, I'm just on to the next call, is you need to treat that like a late arrival with rescheduling, or if you can fit them in at the end of the day, but just accommodating everyone and calling them back 3 or 4 times throughout the day when you have other patients, that's just not going to work. You need to be the person that sets the boundaries and educates the patient on the way this works, or you're going to run into an issue to where your clinic visits are going to be worse off than when you're running behind in your own physical clinic. So having some structure and accountability held by you and your patient by calling them and starting on time and by expecting them to be on time is really important for the telemedicine. With that said, I think it's important to not only keep strict times with the appointments and limiting how much time you have with them to how much time you normally would spend with them in clinic, but then also have a structured time where you actually, even though you're at home, you're working on clinic visits the normal amount of time you'd work on clinic visits. And so whatever time you would normally leave work, you should sign off and leave your computer. You know, this is a time in which we're all wanting to help and work hard, and I'm sure everyone is, but you know, burnout is real, and this is an overwhelming thing to go through as it is. You're not expected to work 24/7, and it's your job to say when it's time to sign out and be done. So just because work is at your computer and it's at your fingertips and it's, you know, enticing to help one more person, you know, continuing to check my chart for those messages that are coming in, continuing to call late patients back, you know, 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night. You know, if that's not what you would normally do in your normal clinic role, then that's not what you do now. You know, we have to take care of people, but you have to set standards, mainly because this is going to be a marathon that we're running right now with transitioning to telemedicine. This isn't just a sprint to take care of people in the next couple of weeks. So if we don't set some standards and set limitations for ourselves, essentially allowing there to be some boundaries that exist, then you're never going to get to a point to where this feels comfortable. You're going to always feel like you're working. You're going to always feel like you're catching up. So I think it's really important to just separate the two, your work life and your personal life, even though you're working at home. Now, the final point I want to make is where I see this going in the future for healthcare providers. I think we definitely see an opportunity to transition to doing more telemedicine visits when things are back to normal clinical operations. I think it's long overdue, and really this is just showing us how much we can get done via telemedicine. And not only is it going to help us take care of patients more efficiently, but it's going to give the patients an opportunity to be seen in situations in which they would not be able to due to scheduling or transportation or other limiting factors. Specifically, I think there needs to be opportunities you look at right now of patients you typically would call back, and you know, as the conversation starts or based on the content of the message you receive from your medical assistant, that this is going to be need to be another visit. Based on that, if you feel like you're going to either need to do an evaluation, physical or an HPI, or you feel like you're going to be prescribing a new treatment, that potentially could be a telemedicine visit instead of you just spending 20, 35 minutes on the phone discussing all this information, as we all have been in that situation and you don't get compensated in any way and you provided a completely different evaluation and treatment plan for the person. Not only is it probably going to not be as tight of a plan as it could be for the patient, but there needs to be some kind of control and way in which you're in which we're compensated, but then also able to document everything we're doing for the patients as we're changing their treatment plans. And so I think, you know, screening out those people first, I think those are the first people for me anyway, they're going to be transitioned to telemedicine. So not necessarily do I think I need you to come in, but I think I'm going to need to have more than a verbal phone conversation with you that isn't going to end up taking 20 to 30 minutes of my time on the phone, you know, it's 7 o'clock at night or something. I've already heard a lot of people in the sports medicine area talk about doing this for triage. In a lot of sports clinics, those guys, you know, can see up to 60 patients in a day. It's a heavy, heavy load. And just from my experience of working in sports, which I've done a lot of sports medicine, whether it be sideline coverage or covering in clinics, it's one of my favorite areas of medicine, actually, that most of it is triaging. And this is an amazing area I can think of where we can provide triaging early on. Now, this is just the example I know. I know there are a lot of other areas respective to other providers that you can think of with what you do where there can be triaging done. But I'm just speaking kind of in my own experiences within physical medicine, rehabilitation, and sports medicine. But in particular, there can be a lot of triaging done with the injury to decide if they need to come in for the physical exam part. And then at that point, you can decide what part of your clinic's dedicated to actually doing telemed, which is going to be kind of more your triage sessions, and which ones are going to be physical examination to really make it a decision point of care. Now, I just want to emphasize and keep in mind here that this is more of a place for a specialist, I think, once it gets to triaging at that level for sports injuries. Like I said, I know there's other areas that I'm not touching on because it's not what I do, but you know, I don't think that degradation of the care that the patient receives if we're able to ask very specific questions from a specialist that treats similar injuries all the time. Right now, I can think of 5 questions I would ask about a ankle sprain that would help me decide if I was going to bring a patient in or not. And there's so many other areas of sports medicine where the same thing can be done, and you quickly know if that patient needs to be just seen via telemedicine visit or needs to come in and you need to put hands on that patient and decide what they're going to do. The great thing about that is patients are going to get care fast and quick. They're saving time. They're not coming into the clinic. They're not taking up time in your clinic schedule to do that. And you can also divide and conquer, and someone else like a tertiary care provider can be doing that, while you're actually seeing your patient. So I see the volumes of patient care being able to increase, as well as saving the patient's time and saving the healthcare system time and energy from bringing those patients in. The billing on aspects of that would be very different too, because there is no facility fee, obviously. If a patient's not coming in, you're not billing for the facility. Now, so overall, I think the pandemic for the coronavirus is going to definitely shape the way we look at treating people currently, but more so also from this, taking away an opportunity to implement a huge change in technology in the way we take care of patients. It's really exciting, and I think it's going to be a lot of changes to come. And I'm really trying to capitalize on the opportunity now to learn all of this, because I do think that there's going to be an opportunity where I'm going to be happy that I learned all this now and can either lead the way in helping people how to implement this in my next position, or just knowing what I'm doing, because that's the way things are done. You don't want to be the one left behind because you refuse to learn how to do this. And so the primary takeaway really is to learn how to do telemedicine. Not only learn the technology, but mess around with it and learn tips and tricks that work better for you that I didn't mention, that make your clinical practice more streamlined. Learn about billing, learn about all the things that affect delivering this amazing gateway to care for patients in the most efficient way possible that helps you and helps the patient. This is definitely going to be something that you're going to wish was in your tool bag 90 days from now. And if you don't learn it now, you're just going to be behind.
Thanks for listening to this podcast on how to live a healthy, fit, and balanced life 365 days a year. If you have specific questions related to the information in this podcast, you can email me at simone.maben@gmail.com.